Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find at the top of Daf Kuf. Before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a no say in the margin, a topic heading. We will see in this Mishnah, Machloikos v'tainos bein moicher lelokeach, disagreements and claims between a seller and a buyer. We'll see tainos vadai, where claims are made, each one from a position of certainty, and Eini Yodea, situations where one will say, I don't know, where one side expresses doubt. The Mishnah, as we have marked it, is broken into two categories by way of examples. The first deals with a doubt that arises concerning the time of birth of an offspring concerning an animal that was transferred, that whose ownership was transferred. Was the birth of the offspring in the original party's possession, or was it after the transfer took place? The second part of the Mishnah deals with the disagreements concerning was it a large one or the small one that was sold? We'll see that in practical terms as we go through the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah: Hamachlif Pora b'chamor v'yolda. Someone, two people. One is switching a pora in exchange for a pora is a cow in exchange for a donkey. And the pora, the cow, gave birth. V'chein ha-moicher shivchas v'yolda. Likewise, someone who is selling his bondmaid, and she gave birth. Ze omer ad shelo mocharti. The original owner says, the birth took place before I sold it. V'ze omer mishelo kachti. And the purchaser says, the receiver says, after I bought it. In other words, the birth took place in my domain. Hoyulo shnei avodim, echad gadol ve'echad katan. A person owns two slaves, one large, one small. V'chein shnei sodas, echad gadolo ve'echad tana. Likewise, a person owns two fields, one large, one small. Halokech Omer, the buyer claims, Godo Lokachti, I bought the large one. Halo Omer, the original owner, in this first of several examples, says, Eini Yodea. So, what's the result of a disagreement between them in that form, where the seller says, I know I bought the large one, and the seller says, well, I don't know which one I sold. Zocha begodol. So the receiver benefits and gets the large field. He is issuing a claim of certainty. The second example, Hamoicher oimer katan mocharti valo omer eini yodea. The seller says with certainty, I sold the small one, and the buyer says, I don't know. Ein loy elo katan. He gains only the small one. Ze oimer godol v'ze omer katan. Here, the two parties are arguing from positions of certainty. The buyer says, I bought the large one. The seller says, I sold the small one. The way this is settled is by the seller who originally has had possession of both. In order to maintain the large one, he swears that he sold the small one. Zeomer eini yodea, zeomer eini yodea, where each side comes from a position of doubt. So the resolution of that is yachloku. So the property is split. On the side of our Gemara, on the margin, we have a new no say topic heading / mivneh structural note. The triangle marking appears, and the triangle is described here as ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth or give and take style Gemara. As you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice how the triangle appears in an alternating direction. So with the point facing up, they represent Kusho's questions. The inverted triangles represent Tshuva's responses. Lahasbir, we're here to explain Loma Poska HaMishnah Yachloiku. Why does the Mishnah rule that division takes place? B'mikra Hashel Sofek Birshus Mi Nolda. When there's a doubt in whose domain it gave birth. We saw three lines from the top where the value of the offspring is divided. We have Vlad Hapora, we have the offspring of the cow, and Vlad Hashivcha, the offspring of the bondmaid. Now, the Gemara. Amai Yochloku, we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the arrow above where you saw that ruling in the Mishnah. Why does the Mishnah rule split? Velechsi birshus deman kaima, velevi idoch amoitsi mechaveri olof horaya. Why not velechsi? Let us see in whose domain the animal is. And the other one, the other party, will be considered the one extracting from current possession. And when one comes in an attempt to extract, in other words, A is trying to extract from B. That means A, Mr. A, does not have possession of it. He is the motzi mechavero. And the rule is that the burden of proof is upon you. The person, the one in whose domain the animal is found, has at the start, at the outset, a stronger claim, a stronger hold on it. It's in his domain. If you're coming along to extract it, so you, the burden of proof is upon you. Why then does the Mishnah say Yachloku when we can simply see in whose domain it is standing? Omar Rav Chiya bar Alvin Omar Shmuel ba'oimedes Be'agam. With regard to the cow, we're talking about a case where it is standing out in the fields, in the marshes. And Shivchonami, the case of the bondmaid, the Kaimo Besimta. She is not standing in either one's domain, but she's standing in a Simta. This is a, Rashi describes it as a, in the street, so to speak, in a corner off the main road, where it's a place that sales of animals and slaves took place. So she's standing there. She's not in either one's domain. Question. But still, why the Mishnah ruling of split? V'nukmo acheskas demora kamo v'levi idoch amoitzi mechaver olvaraya. We know that the cow and the bondmaid were once in someone's possession, in the seller's possession. So why not decide the matter like that? The cow was in the owner's possession. He's called the morakama, the first owner. The bondmaid likewise. And since there is a doubt, let us say that the offspring belongs there to the morakama. The Gemara responds, Ha'amani sumchus hi diomar. This Mishnah is taught by sumchus, or is in accordance with sumchus ruling. Moman amuta besofik chokin below shvua. When there's a matter of financial doubt, division takes place without any swearing. The Gemara asks, Amor Domar Sumchus B'Shemo V'Shemo. We know that Sumchus issues his ruling when both sides issuing claims are coming from a position of doubt, where we don't know Bori Ubori Mi Omar, but where the two sides are arguing from a position of certainty, as we saw in the Mishnah. So Mi Omar, does Sumchus say in a case like that also split without a shvua? Omar Rabo Bar Rav Huna in Omar Sumchus Afilu Bibori Ubori. Rabo says that yes, Sumchus's position of split when you have a doubt is even a doubt here. The doubt arises because each party is issuing a claim of certainty. So we don't know who's telling the truth. We don't know who is correct. So that doesn't change the picture for Sumchus. Even then, split. Rava Omar li'olam kiomar Sumchus shema v'shema. Sumchus says split only when the claims are from a position of doubt. Avo bori ubori lo omar utni. And in fact, Sumchus, according to Rava, did not say his position of split when both parties were arguing from a position of certainty. And as far as the Mishnah text is concerned, you have to upgrade the understanding thusly. The Mishnah ruled Chalkin, yes? Well, Ze Omer Shemo Ad Shelo Mocharti, Ve Ze Omer Shemo Mishelo Kachti. In the Mishnah that ruled split, it's because each party was saying the birth, maybe it took place, and the seller is saying, maybe it took place before I sold it. And the buyer is saying it might have taken place after I bought it. So at this point, we have a machlokis between Rabba Rav Huna and Rava as to when Sumchus says Yachloku. Is it limited to a case of Shema v'Shema, or does he go so far as to say we split even when both parties are issuing claims of certainty? We have a new marking, and on the side of the Gemara, we also have a topic heading and a mivnei structural note that follows. So that the nosei mosai omar sumchus de moman amuta besafek chokin. Under what circumstances does sumchus say that when there's an issue of financial doubt, split it? Is it limited to shema v'shema, where the two sides are claiming claims of doubt? Or even bori ubori, where both sides are issuing claims of certainty? A volcano shape will appear, a trapezoid, and under the Mivne heading, where this is featured, we've written Kushyos al Chuvas Rabo ba Rav Huna. We'll be challenging the response that we saw in the name of Rabo Rav Huna, that extended Sumchus and his ruling of Yachloku even to Bori Ubori. Now the Gemara, we have a long question. Note that this question and the following question also are both marked as long questions. Tanan, Ze Oimer Eini Yodea, Veze Oimer Eini Yodea, Yachloku. That, of course, we saw in the Mishnah, end of the Mishnah had, that is case 4, each side said Eini Yodea, and the result was split. So Bishlamo L'Rova Midaseifa Shema V'Shema Reishonami Shema V'Shema. From the fact that the end of the Mishnah features that, so the beginning of the Mishnah as well was a case of Shema V'Shema. And that's how Rava explained our Mishnah. So things work out well according to Rava. Elo l'rabo barav huna diomar in omar sumchus afilu bori ubori. Rabba claimed that Simcha says Cholkim, that the parties will split even where both are coming from a position of certainty. Hashto Bori Ubori Omar Chloku. Now, Rabba Bar Rav Huna explained the Cholkim of the Reisha as even in a case of Bori Ubori. So once we know that he says split, even where both sides are coming forward with claims of certainty, nevertheless split, Shema v'shema mibaya, does the Mishnah need to go on to tell me that which is even more obvious? Once you establish where both sides are arguing from a position of certainty and we nevertheless say split, it's obvious then that where both sides are coming from a position of doubt that will split. So as far as Rabba Bar Rav Huna is concerned, the continuation of the Mishnah, when you reach the end of the Mishnah, that casts a shadow of a doubt on Rabba's explanation of the Reisha. The Gemara says, "E mishum ha lo irya." If that is the basis of your, let's say, raising a question on Rabba, it's not a real objection. Tana Seifa Legluye Reisha. This is another, we'll call it, acceptable Mishnah style. The Mishnah teaches the end, the latter part, in order to shed light on the earlier part. Shelo Tomar, so that you don't say Reisha Shema V'Shema, that the Reisha is limited to a case of the two parties arguing from a position of doubt, and only then split avo bori ubori lo. But if the two parties were arguing from a position of certainty, then we wouldn't say thusly. Therefore, tana seifa shema v'shema, the seifa itself speaks of shema v'shema, where the two parties argue from a position of doubt, michlal, leaving us room to infer or extrapolate from that the Reisha Bori Ubori, that the Reisha is a different case where both are coming from positions of certainty. And even so, the resolution is split. So that's Rabba's answer in showing how the Reisha is in fact dealing with Bori Ubori as well, and Sumchus says, even then, Yachloku. Tanan. Again, a long question, with the Gemara feeling initially that things work out better for Rava. Tanan. Ze omer godol, veze omer koton. Yishova hamoicher shekoton mochar. This too was a quote. From our Mishnah, the purchaser claimed in the case of there were two items, one large, one small. The purchaser claimed I bought the large one. Seller says I sold the small one. The solution is where the seller swears that he sold the small one, and we say Bishlamo l'Rava, the Omar ki Omar Sumchus Shema v'Shema. Rava limited Sumchus's ruling of Yachloku where both parties were arguing from a position of doubt. Avol Bori Ubori Lo Omar, but where both were, the buyer and seller were arguing from positions of certainty, Sumchus did not say split. Mishum Hachi Yishova. Therefore, the solution here is in fact not split, it's rather swear, namely seller swears. Elo L'Rava Rav Huna D'Omar Yun Omar Sumchus Afilu Bori Ubori. That Sumchus says Yachloku, they split even where both parties were arguing from a position of certainty. Amayi Shova Mocher, why is the Mishnah's ruling let seller swear? Yachloku Miboyale, the resolution should have been split. The Gemara responds, Moide Sumchus, Hecha Deika Shvua Deiraisa Kideboinon Lemeimar Lekamon. Sumchus will concede that the solution is swear. We're within the controversy between buyer and seller, there is grounds for a Torah-based oath, as the Gemara will explain later on. We can take a peek at Rashi. Rashi spills the beans. He tells you already what the Gemara will suggest later on. So let's do that now. Rashi that we're looking at is more than halfway down the Rashi commentary. Moira Samchis, Hechadiko Shvuda Raisa, Delekamon, Mukminon Law. Later in the Gemara, the Gemara establishes the case as Bidikata Liyoda. The arm of the bondmaid was cut off. Delav Heloch Hu. It's not an example of the where the seller is, we'll say he is admitting, I sold you the smaller one, here, take her as she is, meaning as she is complete. Take her, the complete shivcha, in a case of haloch, where you have a disagreement with where the two parties, and the one party says, haloch, and take this, take what I'm claiming I gave you, I sold you, you take it. That would be the basis of no oath, of exemption from oath. But since that's not the case here, since kota liyada, the shifcha that he's offering is not in a complete form the way he originally had sold her, or claimed he sold her, so it's not a case of take her as she was. Let's read that again. The lav helahu hai de komoidi le begavoi. The one that he is admitting, the seller is admitting that he sold, it's not the, she's not in that state that she was originally when the sale is said to have taken place. The is le, and another point is that the Mishnah holds, Sumchus will hold, Nishboyin ala avodim, contrary to other opinions that say that one where there is a controversy concerning slaves, the Torah exempts from an oath. Not so, according to Sumchus. V'islei, and another point that he holds is that even though you're dealing with a claim and a admission that don't match one another, there are some opinions that exempt from oath in cases like that. Nevertheless, Sumchus will not hold like that, but rather, where a claim was placed for wheat and the party admitted barley, that is enough, that's sufficient, or that you will still take a shvua under circumstances like that. You can refer to that as apples and oranges. There are other opinions, though, on each one of these points that disagree. Nevertheless, in order to set up the Mishnah like Rabba by Rav Huna wants to claim that it's authored by Sumchus, and even though in general where there's simply a controversy of Bori or Bori, Sumchus would say split, not so where there is the basis of a Shvua Doraisa. We read the Rashi, who gave you basically headlines of what to expect later on. So, for further clarification, for a better or clearer understanding, we'll just wait for the Gemara. The main point, though, for right now is that if the disagreement between the two parties is such that there is reason for a Torah-based Shvua to be imposed, Sumchus doesn't deny that and says that the solution will be by swearing and thereby settling the matter. Hoyu lo shnei avodim, echad gadol ve'echad katan. And we saw in the Mishnah in one of the cases of Yishova Hamocher. On the side, we have a topic heading, Lahasbir Psaka Mishnah. We're here to explain the ruling of the Mishnah, Yishova, B'Tano Eved Gadol, V'Hoydeloi Eved Katan, where the claim was made by the buyer, you sold me the large eved, the large slave, and the seller admitted, I sold you the small one. So the Gemara now asks, Amai Yishova, why is there any swearing to take place to begin with? And we already touched on these points in the Rashi that we read. We have to recognize that there is a book of rules concerning circumstances that justify an oath. If the circumstances don't match those rules, then there's no oath. So we ask over here, the circumstances of our Mishnah would seem to be contrary to the circumstances that justify an oath. The first question, Masha ta'ano lo haydalo, Masha haydalo lo ta'ano. When we speak about an oath in a case of modeb and excess, where you have partial confession, this is a point that we've discussed in our recent shiurim. I don't want to dwell on that because you can simply go over the Gemaras that we've had in our last couple of Dapim, and you'll see more on the topic of Moedah B'Mitzas. But when we speak about partial admission, and in our Mishnah you have a form of that, if you will, a hint to it, where one party is claiming the larger, and the other party is admitting to less. However, that idea of moida b'miktsas, where there's partial confession, one would swear, would be in a case where a person claims you owe me $100, and the other party admits dollars. Yes, I owe you dollars, but not $150. I owe you, and the other $50 I don't owe you. That's where the hodah, where the admission is of the same nature, just a lesser quantity of the claim, dollars and dollars. But here we have large servant versus small servant. As far as the Gemara's feeling is concerned, that's apples and oranges. They're two different things. And hence, just to read that again in the Gemara, Masha Toano, that which the buyer was claiming, lo hoidolo, the seller was not admitting, umasha hoidolo, and that which the seller admitted, i.e. the smaller slave, lo tana, that wasn't, the buyer wasn't claiming, you sold me a small slave. V'od, and another reason not to have an oath, heilahu, when the seller is saying, I admit that I sold you the small one. He's saying, I sold you the small one and take it. Rashi says, Heilachu v'zeh shemoidolov, and that which he is admitting to, Muchon hu litlo. He is ready and available for taking. And the equal, Amadur Mode Heilach Potter Beperakaman, the first Perak, Tav Dalid. We saw Rav Sheshes, who argued with Rav Chiya, and he said that in a case like that, where you have that, we'll say that partial type confession, and in addition to that, he is saying, and take it, that is reason for exemption from oath. And a third objection to the ruling of the Mishnah, the Oid, Ein Nishvoin Ala Avodim. There's another rule that says that oaths are not made concerning slaves, where there is doubt or there is a controversy in claims, and the topic concerns slaves. There is no oath taking to begin with. How then are we to explain our Mishnah, where claims and admissions involve two different things, and the other, there's halach here, and it's involves slaves to begin with. Omar, Rav, betoyano domi. Rav says, we got it all wrong up till now, but rather, the claims are for money. Demei eved godol, demei eved katan. And likewise, demei sadek gedola, demei sadek tana. Rashi says, "Demei eved gadol masarti loch biodcha shetikneuli v'lo konisa v'tov o hadomim." The claimer says, I gave you enough money to buy for me a large slave, and you didn't buy it for me, so give me back the money. And the other party, the party claimed from, responds and says, yes, you gave me money, but not as much money as you are claiming. So you're not dealing with a matter of a swearing over slaves. You're dealing with swearing over cash. And you don't have the problem of mashita and elahadola, because the claim and the admission are both concerning the same type of item, that is cash. It's not apples and oranges. And there's no halach, there's no statement here, there's no indication of the party admitting, you gave me a lesser amount and here and take it. He's simply saying, yes, I owe you the lesser amount. Ushmuel Omar. Shmuel has a different approach. He says, "Betoyanoi ksus eved." Ksus means garment. Ksus eved godol, ksus eved cotton. The garment of a large slave, that's what I bought from you. And the seller says, no, the garment of a small slave is what I sold to you. Likewise, with regard to the fields, Oimre Sode Gedela, Oimre Sode Ktana. We didn't mention before, but both for Rav and for Shmuel, the reason for their not reading the Mishnah as it is, literally, large field, small field, is because there's another rule that we hold, Ein Nishboin Ala Karkois, that oaths are never taken over a controversy concerning real estate. So Rav transmuted that into cash, and Shmuel, how does he deal with the issue of the fields? He says like this, Oimre Sode Gedoilo, Oimre Sode Ketana. Buyer is claiming, you sold me the number of sheaves of grain that a large field would produce, and the seller admits that I sold you the number of sheaves that a small field would produce. So as we indicate that, we respond or circumvent the three problems that were raised in the Gemara's question. Focusing on Shmuel's explanation concerning the slave issue, where Shmuel said the argument between buyer and seller concerns ksus, clothing of large slave, clothing of small slave. We start now a series of questions with a ma'akav, a keep track back and forth. We have on the side a mivneh, a structural note, with the triangle tip facing upwards. Kushos represents questions, the inverted triangle tshuvos, answers or responses, kidei lahasbir ha'dikotoni, to explain that which the Mishnah said, denishba al ho'eved v'karka v'toyana gono v'hoidola v'koton. And I should say that the focus is on Shmuel's explanation. So now the Gemara. The Gemara asks, regarding Shmuel's explanation, Eved Godol, Eved Koton, Shmuel said it involved a disagreement concerning the clothing of a large Eved, is what was claimed, and the seller admits, I sold you the clothing of a small slave. How does that solve the problem of Shvua? Ma she'tana ksus. Ksus is a reference to what Shmuel said, the clothing, but ma she'tana lo hodolo, ma she'hodolo lo tano, like we saw before. It's a case of apples and oranges. That which was being claimed, the clothing of a large Eved, means that that's a large-sized suit. is not what the seller was admitting. He was admitting a small suit. And likewise, the small suit that he admitted is not what was being claimed, i.e. the large suit. So there's no so there's still an objection as to why should there be an oath. Kideomar Rav Popo, as Rav Popo explains elsewhere, bedelaifu. Hochanami, here too, bedelaifi. The clothing spoken of are a type of garment that I think you might find in certain traditional garments of people from India. They have what I would describe as a wraparound, what's in effect a long piece of fabric that one would wrap around their body several times, and that constitutes their form of clothing. So that that's lifey, and therefore it's in effect a claim and an admission of the same thing, just a lesser amount. So that if a large eved is wearing this kind of fabric, we'll just use arbitrary numbers, a large eved would require 15 feet of fabric to wrap around his body, and a small eved would require 10 feet of fabric. So the claim is made for, you sold to me 15 feet, and the seller says, I only sold you 10 feet of fabric, of that same thing. Kashile the Rav Hoshaya. The next question, that which was bothering Rav Hoshaya concerning this explanation, midik sus katoni, evet katoni, the whole approach of Shmuel is problematic. The Mishnah doesn't speak about a disagreement between buyer and seller concerning clothing. The disagreement between the two concerns slave. And then that brings us back to one of the objections we saw before was Einish Bo'en Al Avodim. Elo Amar Rav Hoshaya, Kegoin Shatanoi Eved Biksuso Visode Ba'im Reha. The claim was one involved actually two elements. The buyer is claiming, you sold me a large slave with his clothing. So as far as the swearing on the slave is concerned, so fine, we say Einish Bo'en Al Avodim. However, the clothing, especially as we described it before with the lifey, an oath could be generated on the issue of the clothing. And we've learned in the past, and it applies here too, there's a concept known as Gilgal Shvuah, that once you have a Torah-based oath to take, we can insist on that party making another oath that in isolation would not have been able to be imposed, but since he's already on the roll, he's already swearing a Torah-based oath, we would call Moide B'Mikzas, a partial confession. I don't owe you the large amount of fabric, I owe you the lesser amount of fabric. For that, he would have to swear a Shvua D'Oraisa. Concerning the slave also, and by the way, I sold you only a small slave, not like you're claiming a large slave. The Gemara, I might have been guilty, by the way, of over-explaining. We'll see that later in the Gemara. But in the meantime, if we stick to the translation, Rav Hoshaya says there was a claim for a slave, a large slave with his large suit, and a field. You sold me a large field with its large number of sheaves. And the seller admits, I sold you a small slave with a small suit. And I sold you a small field with a small number of sheaves. The Gemara asks, Vakati Ksus, but still regarding the clothing issue, we were hoping that we could impose a Shvua Daraisa based on the clothing and then roll upon him another oath concerning his claim of having sold a small slave. But the Shvua doesn't get off the ground because the confession, the admission that I owe you a small suit for a small Eved, when that was a response to a claim concerning a large suit of a large Eved, and that gets us back to the problem of Mashatana lo hodolo, apples and oranges, Om Rav Papa. So Rav Papa answers like we said in our over-explanation, the clothing spoken about are bidalifi. You'll notice on the second line from the top, the Gemara said, Kidda Omar Rav Papa, as Rav Papa said elsewhere. This is that elsewhere that Rav Papa used that explanation. So, if we were to stop here, then we have successfully explained what, according to Shmuel, what the Mishnah is describing concerning the controversy between buyer and seller, and the slave and need to swear. But we're not out of the woods. Kashyalev Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, well, according to this explanation of Shmuel, what's the point of our Mishnah? The point of our Mishnah was that once he swears concerning the clothing, where there was a modeb that makes us a partial confession concerning the clothing, we roll upon him a shvua concerning the slaves themselves, which otherwise could not have been taken because of ein nishbuen al avodim. But Rav Sheshes says, do I need this Mishnah to reveal that to us, to inform us of that concept of extending a shvua once taken onto a second issue? So Rav Sheshes, it bothered Rav Sheshes, Zoykikin Asa Lashminan. Zokikin is the concept of extending a shvua. Once a shvua daraisa is in place, then we impose another shvua that otherwise couldn't have been taken. Is that what the point of our Mishnah is? Namely, that the shvua concerning the Eved is a result of the shvua concerning the clothing. But Tanina, we've learned about that. We've learned that concept in a Mishnah in Maseches Kiddushin, which says, "Zaykikin hanechosim sheim lachrayas es hanechosim sheyesh lachrayas lishova alehen." The term nechosim sheim lachrayas is a reference to portables. Portables, in contrast to land. Land is described as nechosim sheyesh lachrayas. The terms here are understood better when you talk in terms of a loan and a lender wanting to have a lien on the properties of the borrower. So the concept of a lien upon his properties, even if in the event that those properties are sold by the borrower to other people, that concept is reflected by the term achrayas, a guarantee. Portables are not a source of collection, hence they don't represent a guarantee to the lender. So as a result of all of that, we come up with these expressions. Nechosim sheim achrayas is a reference to portables. Land, though, is a source of security, a source of guarantee for a lender to recover the loan in the event of default. That's referred to by the term land, is therefore referred to by the term of nechosim, property, sheish machrayas, that contain within them the sense of security and guarantee. So this source, though, with these elaborate terms, is simply saying that portables, an oath concerning portables. As we said before, if you a guy claims you sold you owe me 10 pencils, the other party says, I don't owe you 10 pencils, I owe you only 5 pencils. That's an example of a circumstances where the admission of the partial admission will impose upon that party the need to swear. Now, once that oath is in place, if these two parties have a disagreement concerning, we'll say, the sale of land, a large piece of land or a small piece of land, once he is swearing concerning the pencils, we can then make him swear that he owes the other party only a small piece of land, even though the claimer was putting a claim in for a large piece of land. But to swear initially concerning the land controversy, as we said before, ein nishboin al hakarkos, we don't swear concerning a land disagreement. One does not settle the disagreement through the oath. Anyway, what do you see from here? That the concept of zoikikin, of extending a shvua, an oath, from one topic onto another topic, is something that has been revealed elsewhere. I don't need our Mishnah to inform us of that, and yet according to Shmuel's explanation, that is exactly what our Mishnah was doing. Elo Omar Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes comes up with his approach to the Mishnah. Ha money, this Mishnah is according to whom? Rebbe Meir Hidomar Avda Kemetatalin Domi. Slaves are viewed as portables, and therefore slaves in and of themselves are something that one could be made to swear over. The Akati, but still, if you take that approach, what was the disagreement? Seller is admitting, I sold you only a small slave. When the buyer was putting a claim in, you sold me a large slave. But isn't that still a problem of apples and oranges? The Akati, but still, Masha Tano Loi Haidaloi, Masha Haidaloi Loi Tano. So how is Rav Sheshes to deal with that problem? And yet the Mishnah says that there is an oath. Sovar lo kerabon Gamliel, the Snan. So he will hold like Rabban Gamliel. My understanding is that according to Rav Sheshes, if you want to say the Mishnah is authored by Rebbe Meir, that slaves are viewed as portables, Rebbe Meir will also have to accept Rabbi Gamliel's approach. There's a Tanaic controversy here. We've dashed underlined Rabbi Gamliel. We want to focus on him. A claim for wheat and an admission of barley. We said before apples and oranges. Rabbi Gamliel Mechayev. Rabbi Gamliel says that is that's good enough. That's reason enough to impose a shvu. In other words, the fact that the claim and the admission don't match one another, that is not reason enough to exempt from a shvua. Akati, but still, there remains one of the other objections. Hey, luchu, when the seller is saying, I didn't sell you like you claimed the large slave. I sold you the small slave. But he's also saying, and here he is, or here he is, and take it. Hey, lochu. Hey, loch. Here it is. It's here for your taking. And we've explained before, based on Shitas Rav Sheshes on Daf Dalet at the beginning of this Masechta, that when as part of the partial confession is the offer of the item itself, that's reason for exemption from oath. And isn't that the case here? No. Omar Rava Avda de Kota Liode Fisode Shechofa Babur Shichrim Oros. The slave that the seller is confessing to isn't in let's say in complete shape. The small field that he is admitting to is a field though that has sustained damage, so that as we saw earlier in the Rashi, Halach was was characteristic of someone admitting that the item that I am admitting to is here and ready for your taking. But if the item that he is admitting to has sustained some loss, so it's not ready for his taking. He'll have to compensate. There's still compensate for that additional depreciation. So it's not ready as it is for the taking. So as we saw, Rav is saying the slave that he's admitting to, the small slave he's admitting to, is his hand was cut off, and the small field that I'm admitting to is a field that has pits of different natures, different sizes, different shapes dug into it. I think that the issue of the fields is thrown in here that's like by the way. Fields wouldn't have generated an oath to begin with, but the slave, being that we're coming off of Rabbi Meir, that Avdo Kimetatali, slaves would generate the need for an oath. Truth be told, however, the issue of the Sode, the land and an oath concerning it will be discussed in the Gemara as it continues. We now continue in the Gemara with another question. How can you set up Rabbi Meir as... how can you set up the Mishnah as being Rabbi Meir, who holds that slaves are viewed as portables and hence a basis for an oath? V'har Rabbi Meir ibcha shamin onlay. We have heard Rabbi Meir to say the opposite, namely that a slave is like land, and on that land you don't swear. Disnan, here we have a Mishnah that we've seen in the past. Gazal, someone stole Behema, Vizkino, and it aged. Avodim, Vizkino, slaves, and they aged. Mishalim, Shas HaGzela. According to the first opinion, the thief pays according to their value at the time of theft. Rabbi Meir, Oimer Bavodim, Oimer Lo, Hare, Shelchalofanech. When it comes to the pay for the slaves, as opposed to the animal, for the slaves, the thief says, here's your thing, here's your slave as it is. He's aged in the meantime, but how is it that he doesn't pay according to the original value? Because slaves are not subject to theft, the concept of theft. Of course, physically you can kidnap the slave, but the concept of theft, it doesn't apply. And hence, the slave, wherever he is considered in the domain of the owner. And that is tantamount to saying that slaves are like land. Just like land you don't pick up and take away. Karka ainan exelis, Rabbi Meir says slaves are not subject to theft. And if so, they're not subject to an oath either. Ha lo kashya. This last objection isn't really a problem. Kidemachlif Rabo Baravua Vitoni. As we have seen, Rabo has an opposite version of the Tanaic source as follows. Rabbi Meir Omer, regarding slaves, Mishalem Kishasagzela, regarding slaves, you pay according to their original value. They may have aged in the meantime in the possession of the thief, but they're like any other stolen portable. You pay according to their original value. Shalim kishasang zela. And v'chachomim omer lo, the thief can say ba'avodim, in the case of slaves as opposed to animals, harei shelcholofonecha. So in the meantime, the last objection isn't a problem, and we can stick with the approach of Rav Sheshes, that the Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, that Avodim, that slaves are like portables, hence they can generate a Shvua, and we move on in the Gemara. Ella, but still I have a question. Me, my disover Rabbi Meir, Makshinon Karkal Eved. In order to continue with the Rav Sheshis explanation, we have to remind ourselves that in the Mishnah, whatever we said about slaves, we said also about the land controversy. Seller admits, I sold you a small piece of land in the face of the claim of the buyer that you sold to me. I bought from you a large piece of land. And regarding both examples, the Mishnah ruled Yishavah. The seller swears. That swearing concerned the land as well. Now, in order to understand that, we have to we have to make the assumption that Rabbi Meir compares land to slaves. And regarding that, we are now going to raise the question. So we now ask, Elomi mai desova Rabbi Meir makshinon karka levet. From where do we know that Rabbi Meir says compare land to slaves? Ma'evet nishboyin av karka nishboyin. Just like on slaves we swear, so too on land we can impose an oath. Dilma a'evet hu dinishboyin aval akarka lo. Maybe there is a distinction within Rabbi Meir that on slaves we swear, but on land there's no swearing. So how can you be so certain? How can Rav Sheshis claim that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir? We answer. Notice we have a long answer here. Lo salka daitoch. Do not think thusly. Namely, do not think to make as such a distinction. Before getting into the Tanaic source that you see quoted in the frame, let's skip to the main point. The end of this source, you see a dashed underlining that highlights the opinion of the Chachomim that are coming on the heels of Rabbi Meir. So as is often the case, we would reflect from the opinion of the Chachomim back onto Rabbi Meir. Well, what do the Chachomim say? You see, can you skip to the end of the Tanaic source? You see, no oaths are taken on slaves nor on land. And as the Gemara infers from that, on the next line, lav michlad Rabbi Meir sovar nishboyin, we can infer from that that Rabbi Meir holds that you do swear on both. But in other words, that slaves can generate the need for a shvua as well as land, and that would be great for Rav Sheshis' approach. And our Mishnah that speaks about a shvua concerning the slave and the shvua concerning land is authored by Rabbi Meir. Okay, now let's go through the text. So the Gemara says, where the inverted triangle appears, lo sakodaitu, do not think to make such a distinction within Rabbi Meir between slaves versus land, disanya. It says in the following source, hamachlif para b'chamor v'yolda, an exchange of a cow for a donkey took place, and the cow gave birth. V'chein ha-moichir shivchasa v'yolda, likewise someone sold his bondmaid and she gave birth. Ze omer b'rushusi v'ze shoseik. The one party says it gave birth in my domain, and the other party remains silent. Zocha. So the one who claimed that it gave birth in their domain is the winner. Ze omer eini yodea v'ze omer eini yodea. Each party expresses their own uncertainty. Yachloku. They split. Ze omer b'rushusi v'ze omer b'rushusi. Both parties claim with certainty that the birth took place in their domain. Yishova ha-moicher shebirushusi yolda. The seller swears that the birth had taken place in his domain. L'fishikol nishboyin shibatur nishboyin v'lo mishalman divrei Rabbi Meir. The rule of oath takers, nishboyin, according to the Torah, and this is based on, we say the Torah, based on a pasuk, a verse in the Torah, that an oath is an oath of four, we'll say an oath for exemption. He swears, and as a result of the swearing, the swearing backs up his claim of not owing. That's lo mishalman. He swear that I don't owe you. You claiming for me a large amount, I'm admitting to you a small amount, and the other part I deny, and I will not pay. And the swearing concretizes that claim, so he swears not to pay. And in this case, the seller who's admitting to have sold less is the one upon whom the burden of shvua is placed. V'chachomim oimrim. The chachomim respond and say, Ein ishboi lo ala vodim v'lo ala karkos. Oaths are not taken concerning slaves nor concerning land. Well, that's the chachomim in their response to Rabbi Meir. So lav michlal de Rabbi Meir sovar nishmoyin. It would then stand to reason that Rabbi Meir holds that you do swear on both topics, slaves and land. It's worth noting that this Tanaic source didn't make any reference to land. It made reference to a doubt concerning when a birth took place concerning either a cow or a bondmaid. Bondmaid is a slave. No mention in this source of in the original examples where the controversy arose between the buyer and seller, was there any mention of land? Now, I'm making that observation for in anticipation of the Gemara we're going to learn now. The Gemara asks, and notice we have a long question, Mimai, who is to say that from the Chachomim, we are able to conclude that Rabbi Meir holds oaths can be imposed on both land and slaves. Dilma, keshem ka'amrule. Maybe the argument of the Chachomim, as appeared in this source, is in a specific format. It's referred to by the term keshem. Keshem means just like. And the Gemara explains. Kihechi, the Chachomim say to Rabbi Meir, Kihechi the Oidis Lon Bekarkois, just like you concede to us that regarding land there is no oath, Odi Lon Nami Bavodim, concede to us as well regarding slaves, which was the topic of the source in addition to the cow. As I mentioned before, there was no mention in the example of the source, anything concerning land. So the rabbis, the chachomim, were saying to Rabbi Meir, listen, in general, you concede to our position of non-oath when it comes to land. So in this case that we were just discussing, concede to us as well by avodim that there should be no oath. And regarding that, so Rabbi Meir was expressing his dissent that I might agree with regard to land that there's no oath, but regarding slaves there is an oath. By the way, you can see this is all part of a triangle with the point facing up. This creates a difficulty for Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes, by establishing the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir, is predicated upon land being compared to slaves, that in both cases an oath is imposed. At this point, though, we see not so, even within Rabbi Meir, that land is exempt, repels shvuas. Slaves, Rabbi Meir will say there, yes, shvua. Teda, the Gemara continues, let it be known that by land, Rabbi Meir is moide. Rabbi Meir concedes when it comes to land, there's no shvua. And that's what the balance of this section of the, we'll say the long question, demonstrates, that Rabbi Meir concedes regarding land, no shvua. Disnan, Rabbi Meir Omer, Yesh dvorim shein kekarka veinan kekarka, v'ein chachomim moedim lo. There are things, Rabbi Meir says, that are like land, and when we say like land, you'll see that means that there is no shvua, and there are other situations that are not like land, and there would be a shvua. The ein chachomim moedim lo, and the chachomim disagree. So what's the case? Ketzad, What is an illustration? Asara gifanim ta'unos masarti loch. An owner claims that he gave over to someone 10 vines, tunos, laden with grape clusters. Valo omer, and the responder says, when he says, I should say, when the claimer says, I gave you 10 to, let's say, to watch for me. And the responder says, Valo omer einon elo chomesh, you gave me only 5. In other words, I owe you only 5. So you have a case of modeh b'mitzvah, partial confession. Rabbi Meir mechayev achachomim omrim. First of all, Rabbi Meir says an oath must be taken. It's a case of modeh b'mitzvah, achachomim omrim, and the chomim disagree. Kol hamechubar l'karka reu k'karka. That which is attached to the land is like land, and hence no shvua. Rabbi Omar of Yosef Chanina. The point of disagreement between them concerns grape clusters, grapes that are ready for the harvest. In other words, they're not designed to stay on the vines any further. They're currently physically attached, but not designed to stay there any further. The Morsova, Rabbi Meir holds, Kibitzuros Damyon. We view, though they're attached, they're considered as if they're detached. Now, grapes then are portables. They're not land. Rashi adds, very importantly, centrally important, that Rabbi Meir's comment, Kibitzuros Damyon, the grape clusters are viewed as detached, that's fine with regard to grape clusters that are fully ripe. But he will admit that grape clusters that are still that still need their attachment, they're not fully ripe, he, Rabbi Meir, will concede no shvuah, namely, ein nishvoy en al akarkois. That's really the main point of this whole long objection. Let's continue in the Gemara. We left off with the mor savar, the chachomim hold, even though they're fully ripe, lav kibitzuros domin, they're not as if they are detached. We don't view them in our mind's eye as detached. And that's why the Chumash will say that under no circumstances will there be a Shavua. According to Rabbi Meir, in a controversy like that which we did describe before, assuming that the grapes attached to those vines were fully ripe, owner says, I gave you 10 to watch, and responder says, no, you gave me only 5, and he's admitting to 5 vines with fully ripe grapes on them. He's modeh b'mitzvah concerning grapes that we view in our mind's eye as detached. So there's grounds, that's a pun there, for shvuah. But just to repeat the main point, if the grapes were not fully ripe, even Rabbi Meir would concede that there's no basis of a shvuah. Even though it's modeh b'mitzvah, he's admitting that I received 5 vines, which are obviously they're plants that are attached to the ground. I owe you only 5, and I don't owe you the other 5, there would be no shvuah. What are we to do then with our Mishnah? We have all the objections raised before. They still exist. At best, we came up with the possibility of swearing concerning the slaves, the slave controversy, but the land controversy, we don't see anyone who would justify an oath. Elo li'olam k'de Rebbe Yoshaya. We go back to the Rebbe Yoshaya approach. By all means, use the markings. Do you see a star? And you also see an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Mishnah text. Use the star and you go all the way up. Do you see that points to the line where Rebbe Yoshaya appeared? And at that point, way up in the Gemara, Rabbi Shaya justified the Mishnah and the swearing, because the claim was for a slave with the clothing and the field with the sheaves of grain. And the sheaves of grain are portables. The clothing was portable. And once an oath is made concerning those portables, we can then extend the oath to the slave himself and to the field itself, which were part of the original controversy between buyer and seller. The objection that we had to that approach was, as you can see, featured with the arrow, was the controversy, or the problem with that approach was, why do I need our Mishnah to tell us this concept of extending a shvua from an item concerning which oaths are taken onto extending the oath onto items that no shvua is taken? We call it in one word, zaykikin. So now let's read this in the Gemara. Elo li'oilom ki Rebbe Shaya. Let's go back to the Rebbe Shaya approach. Udetashiloch. We had a difficulty with that. Zokikin, do I need our Mishnah to tell me the example of Zokikin, the concept of Zokikin? There's another Mishnah Kedushin that tells us about that. So to that we respond, it's Terech. No, I need this Mishnah. Salka Daita Chamina. Without this Mishnah, I would have thought, Ksus eved ke eved domi. Oimre sade ke sade domi. A claim of clothing that are upon a slave, which is what the claim was for. Guy claims you sold me a large eved with his large piece of clothing. The clothing, in that case, are subsidiary to the slave. Likewise, the field with its sheaves. The sheaves are subsidiary to the field. And if that would be the case, there would be no oath. We don't swear concerning slaves. We don't swear concerning fields. Chomash Malon, the Mishnah, reveals to us that we don't view the clothing and the sheaves as subsidiary, but we view them on their own, in their own right. And hence, we swear upon them as portables, moda b'miksas, as we explained earlier, and we can extend the shvua to the slave and the field. And that's the chiddush, and it's not a standard case of zokikin, but it involves even things like this where I would have otherwise thought they are subsidiary. We continue in the Gemara, ze oimer eini yodea v'ze oimer eini yodea yachloku. Each party says, I don't know. Solution, split the item in doubt. Ha money, this approach is sumchas. He is the approach sumchas takes. Diomar moman amuta besofek chokin. Where there is a doubt concerning monetary matters, split the amount in issue, split the matter at issue. Amo seifa. Well, let's continue reading the Seifa, and we saw Ze Oimer Bershusi, Ze Oimer Bershusi. Each party is claiming that it took place in their domain. In that Braisa that we saw above, each one was claiming that the birth took place in their domain. The resolution was Yishova Hamocher Shebrushuso Yolda. The seller swears that the birth had taken place in his domain. Ula Rabo Bar Ravhuna Diomar In Omar Sumchis Afilu Bori Ubori. This we saw earlier. According to Rabo Bar Ravhuna, Sumchis holds that the resolution of Chokin applies even in a case where both parties were arguing from a position of certainty. So, according to his approach, then why over here does the Mishnah say Yishova? Amai Yishova Mocher? Why is that the Brisa's ruling? Yachloku mibaya. It should have been split. The Gemara answers, Moide Sumchas Hecha Dika Shua De Raisa Udekata Liyada Kedarava. Here the Gemara is quite abbreviated and is relying on everything we had spoken of earlier. Sumchas will concede that where you have a Shvua Daraisa, the basis of a Torah oath, then the solution is not Yachloku, but rather Yishava Hamocher. And in order to avoid the objection of Heilach, we add that the arm of the Shivcha was cut off, as Rava had explained. You can see Rashi, Dekata Liyada Dishivcha, Delav Heilachu. In the original story, there was a sale of a Shivcha, and the doubt concerned when the birth took place. So the seller is saying, the birth took place in my domain, but the Shivcha I do owe you. In other words, you're claiming, the buyer is claiming the Shivcha along with the offspring, and the seller is admitting the Shivcha that I do you, I do not owe you the offspring. We call that Moideh b'miksas, partial, and the Shivcha that I owe you, by the way, her hand was cut off. So I have to compensate for that, and it's hence not a case of Heilach, as we explained earlier. Now, if we look in Rashi, you'll see how precise Rashi is. Rashi, the kata liyoda de shivcha, the arm was cut off, dalav heilachu, umi min hatainahu, it's not a case of apples and oranges. You might have thought, listen, the buyer is putting a claim in for shivcha and baby. Seller is saying, I owe you shivcha, I don't owe you baby. So he's saying, I owe you shivcha. So claim for shivcha and baby, an admission shivcha, sounds maybe like apples and oranges. So Rashi is quick to point out, it's not a problem of that. It's umi min hataina, the admission is of the same nature as the claim. The shivcha v'lodachad gufa hu toyin lei. The mother and the offspring is viewed as one body, one entity. V'zeh hoide b'miksas, and the mocher admitted partial. He says, you're claiming for me mother and child. I admit to you, mother. Rabbi Meir is lay nishboyin ala avodim. And we, in order to explain that, the brice above, Rabbi Meir holds that a shvua can be imposed concerning a disagreement concerning slaves. So that Rashi basically covered all of the possible objections or questions that one may have raised. And now a new Mishnah. Hamoicher zeisov li'etzim. A person sold his olive trees for their wood value. I'm sure everyone is raising eyebrows. How can you sell a tree for wood value? That involves cutting down a fruit-bearing tree, which is a severe prohibition with serious consequences. Nevertheless, we see the sale of an olive tree for its wood value. The osu pochos mirevius lisa'a, and the quality of olives was very poor. So much so that the a saw, which is a dry measure, a quantity, it's a measure of olives. A saw of olives, when pressed, would produce less than a revius. A revius is a liquid measure, less than a revius of oil. So one who sold his olive trees to a buyer for their wood value, and we have to add the main point here, is that the buyer didn't cut down the trees immediately. He left them in the seller's property. And in the meantime, there were olives that grew poor quality. They produced, as we said, a sa'a produced less than a revias of oil. Hare elu shel baal hazesim. So those olives will belong to the tree purchaser. Osu revias l'sa'a. If a revias of oil would be produced from those olives, Zelmer Zesai Gudalu, Zelmer Artsi Godla. Each one is claiming that the olives belong to him. The buyer of the tree says, my trees produced those olives. And the owner of the land says, my land produced the olives, Yachloku, so they will split them. Shotaf nor zeso v'nostom l'soich zde chavero, a strong current river, a river current, washed away olive trees and transferred them to a neighbor's field. Ze omer zeisai godlu v'ze omer artsi godla. One claims that the trees produced, and the other one claims, my land produced, Yachloku, they split. The Gemara will elaborate on what we have simply translated in the Mishnah. Looking at the beginning of the Mishnah, we look also at the side in our margin, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The diamond highlights shlavim, stages, lahasbir, to explain, hechi domi, how are we to understand, ha dekatoni v'masnisen, that which it taught in the Mishnah, chiluk bein, zesim haroyim, shoysim pochus mirvias, shemen, lisa'a, le'elu shoysim mirvias, shemen, lisa'a. Hechi domi, e de omar lei. You'll notice the double underline, also one of our series markings, highlights the possible claims. The Omar Lei. E the Omar Lei Kaitzlauter, if the seller said, you know, you're buying the tree for their wood value, well, cut them down immediately. And he tarried, let them stay there. He didn't cut them down immediately. Well, then, Afilu Pochos Mirvias Nami Labala Kaka. Not like the Mishnah ruled. But rather, even if it's less than a revias of oil that would be produced, those olives should remain with the field owner. After all, the buyer did not cooperate with the terms of the sale. E diomale, if the seller said, "Kol emas de boyes coats, whenever you want to come, cut down the trees that I sold you, whatever." Well, filu revias nami lebal zesim. In that case, then even if the olives were productive, they would produce a revias per saw, the olives should go to the tree purchaser. And yet, our Mishnah did not indicate thusly. Lo, tzricha, di amar le stama. What our Mishnah is addressing is a case where the sale was, in general terms, stam means unqualified. And being that it was stam, wasn't designated, wasn't qualified, we say, pochos mirvias lo kapti inshi. Olives that are of such poor quality that produce less than a revias per sa'ah, people have no objection, no concern over them. People are not mindful of that. Revias kapti inchi, but a revias of oil produced from a saw of olives, that's an amount that people would be mindful over. Omar Reb Shimon ben Pazi, revias shamru, when we speak about the olives producing a revius per sa'ah, the truth is you would really need more than a total of a sa'ah to achieve the revius in question. Chutz, we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Aleph, Amar Aleph, Chutz min ha-hotza'ah. Rashi says at the top, Chutz min ha-hotza'ah shu motzi b'mesikosin u'b'artzirosan. We're talking about expenses. In order to produce the revius, there are expenses. So the revius that we're speaking of, that those olives would have to produce, is a revius after expenses. So that's why I suggested that you would probably need to have then, you would have to have more than a sa'ah of olives, and they would produce, let's say, just for illustration purposes, produce more than a revius, but you'd have to then subtract that extra amount above a revius to cover expenses. Shotaf nor zesov yachloku. The Mishnah described a river current that washed away olive trees, and they ended up being replanted in a neighbor's field. The original owner is claiming that the trees are a function of the controversy between the two people is that one is claiming the trees are responsible for their own growth, and the other one is saying that the land is responsible for its growth. Now, the Mishnah in and of itself, I believe, is extremely vague, and now as we look into the Gemara, you will see two approaches. First, the approach of Ula and his version of Reish Lakish, followed by Rovin's version of Reish Lakish, and on the side we have a Nosei / Mivne heading, Shnei Lishonos Bereish Lakish Behez Berhad Katani, two versions of Reish Lakish in an attempt to explain that which the Mishnah taught, Shotaf Nor Zesov, and the resultant Psak, resultant ruling of Yachloku, of splitting. Now the Gemara. Omar Ula, Omar Reish Lakish, Lo Shanu, the teaching of the Mishnah, the ruling of the Mishnah that they shall divide, El Shenekru Begushehenu Leachar Sholosh. The olive trees were uprooted with a clump of dirt, of earth, surrounding the roots. And the Mishnah is speaking of a situation where 3 years have passed. Now, 3 years, just by way of general background, is the amount of time that would have to go by before a person can benefit from the fruits of a tree. Within the first 3 years of fruit production, the fruits are categorized as orla. Orla fruits within the first 3 years are forbidden. One cannot even benefit from them, let alone eat from them. The Rashi on the fourth line from the top says, "Ulachar sholosh klomar, afilu nekru begushayan." Even given that the trees were uprooted with the dirt around their roots, lo shanu the achloku, the ruling of the Mishnah that the two parties divide, elalachar sholosh shanim sheshotfon hanor. It's we're talking about after 3 years have passed since the river swept them away. She'ilu nitan mitchila bala karka below gushayan kvar yotsu afshav michlal orla. Even if, and being that 3 years have gone by, even if the landowner, the new landowner, was putting his claim in for trees that had been uprooted without the dirt around them, since 3 years have gone by, he still has a claim Kfar Yotsu Achshav Michal Orla, the Hashto Lo Mahani Le Gushin, the Baal Azesim Midi Leachar Shalosh. Once 3 years have passed, the clumps of earth that were originally around the roots don't serve to enhance the claim of the original tree owner. So now we go back to the Gemara. The ruling of the Mishnah, as Reish Lakish says, applies to trees that were uprooted with dirt around their roots and were at a point in time after 3 years. Avol, besoch shalosh, within the first 3 years, hakol shebal hazesim, everything will belong to the original tree owner. The Omar Le, the original tree owner, will say, if we are within the first 3 years, iat natis besof shalosh mihava achlis, if you would have planted these trees, well, within the first 3 years, would you have been able to eat from the fruits? Certainly not. So that within the first 3 years, it would appear that the original tree owner has exclusive rights to the fruits, to the olives. Just once again, assuming that when the trees were uprooted, they were in fact uprooted with clumps of dirt around them sufficient for the tree to survive on, which helps to explain why even though they were uprooted, the orla prohibition is not renewed. If the trees were in fact uprooted without dirt around the roots, whereby the tree could not survive, then without being replanted, obviously, then the original orla prohibition would be renewed. So at this point in the Gemara, within 3 years of the river washing and replanting the trees in the new field, in the neighbor's field, within the first 3 years, the new land owner, the new owner, or the new the neighbor has no claim. And why? As we saw in the Gemara, because the original owner can say, within the first 3 years, had you planted these trees, you would have no benefit from those fruits. Let the neighbor say back, I anonati, if as you are claiming, had I planted the trees, had I planted these trees, lachar shalosh, havachil no le kule, I would have been the exclusive owner and eaten all of the olives. Hashta, now that we are within those first 3 years, tochal palga badoi, so eat together with me half of them. Let's split. So at this point then, the counterclaim of the neighbor would suggest that even within the first 3 years, he's entitled to half of them. And yet Ula's version of Reish Lakish indicated otherwise. But what about this very strong claim? Ela kiyoso roven omer Reish Lakish. Now we have Rovin's version. Lo shanu, the halach of the Mishnah that the olives are split between the two parties, the original owner and the neighbor. Ela shenekru begushehen, the trees were uprooted with the clumps of earth around the roots. Ubesoich shalosh, and within the first 3 years. Avoli achar shalosh hakul balakarka, after 3 years, the neighbor has exclusive rights to those olives. The Amale, the balakarka, the neighbor says, Iano nati, had I planted these trees, Achar shalosh mi lo hava achil no le kule, after 3 years, I would have been the exclusive owner of them. So that the whole approach of splitting the olives, that's only within the first 3 years. Question, v'leimale, could not the original tree owner say, e at not this, had you planted them, besoch sholosh lo hava achlis, within the first 3 years, you wouldn't have eaten any of them. They would have been prohibited as orla. Hashto, now that the trees came with the clumps of earth and the fruit is not forbidden, but nevertheless, ko'achlis palgo ba'doi, we should split. You should eat half together with me, so that the ruling of your claim, let's say, of exclusive rights is unfounded. Let us just refine the last point in the Gemara. The thinking had been that the original owner of the trees could put a claim in for sharing even after 3 years by saying that had you, the neighbor, the landowner, planted them within the first 3 years, you wouldn't have had any benefit from them whatsoever. Now that 3 years have gone by, I want a share in them. So the response to that is, Mishum di Omale, the landowner, the neighbor, says, what you claimed, namely that within the first 3 years I would have had no benefit, that's simply not true. E ano nati, had I planted the trees from start during those first 3 years, havuktini, the trees would have been very small, as opposed to large olive trees that were washed into my field. If I had planted, they would have been small. Vizarano to Husayu Silkoviaka, would have been able to plant underneath them, surrounding small olive saplings, all kinds of vegetables and profited. But now that the trees that were washed into my field were large, creating shade under them, I lost all of that productive value. So trying to advance your claim thereby depriving me of exclusive benefit after the 3 years on the grounds that during the first 3 years I was out of the picture, that simply is not true. Tana, Omar halo, zeisai ani notel, ein shomen lo. This Tanaic source says that if the original tree owner says, I want to take back my trees from your field, we don't allow him, we don't listen to him. My time, but why not? Omar Rebbe Yochanan, mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The marking that you see highlighting Rebbe Yochanan is here so as to compare it with what you see later on the page. Mirtzah Hashem, we'll see this in our next shiur. Again, a statement made by Rabbi Yochanan. And what does Rabbi Yochanan say? Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Because of our interest in the development of the land of Israel, we don't allow the uprooting of trees and having them removed from this field. Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Kagon da tzricha rabba, a ruling like that requires a rabba, a great man like Rabbi Yochanan. Had Rabbi Yochanan not said this, we on our own would not have come to that conclusion. Once again, this marking, this double underline, you'll see has a parallel appearance later on, and that's why we marked it. And the basis for this you can discover in Rashi, Dibur HaMasel, Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, that you find in the last quarter of the Rashi commentary. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.